Bold. Brave. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode number 548 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by a repeat offender. That's right. Dr. Susan Kleiner is back again. Absolutely. There she is with her little heart and everything. And she is absolutely extraordinary. The owner and founder of High Performance Nutrition with a PhD and an RD and every single kind of education and academic standing you can in the nutrition world. And she has written countless books, and the latest one was The Good Mood Diet, Feel Great While You Drop That Weight. Oh, no, that wasn't meant to really rhyme, was it? It was. Okay, I get it. Anyway, so Dr. Susan Kleiner, welcome back to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pam. I am thrilled to be a returning guest or a repeat offender, however.
I kind of like repeat offender. I don't know. Maybe I have like some law enforcement in my blood somewhere.
Oh, I think it's just the rebellion in you.
You know something? You are absolutely correct. You know, you always nail it, Sue. I'm just saying. So here's the deal. Here we are at the beginning of a new year, 2026. And you know what's on everyone's damn mind. And that is their number one thing is health. And usually health is translated into weight because the majority of Americans, I'm only going to stick with Americans right now, the majority of Americans are at least overweight, okay, at least overweight, and they've been that way since 1996, quite frankly. We've had a majority of people. Of course, overweight then was like 5 or 10 pounds. Now it's more like 30. And then we have, and women are worse than men, a greater percentage of obesity out there. And women, gotta say, we're in the 40s, right? 40%. So we've got all kinds of things going on. And then we also have the GLP type medications floating around. The announcement about Wegovy from Novo Nordisk coming out in tablet form now, and basically oral form, just hit the news. And so now we've suddenly got all kinds of interesting options out there. And people are sitting there saying, okay, what am I supposed to do? And talk to me about this whole issue of intermittent fasting, since it's everywhere and people are talking about it all the time, and what's going to end up working well for people. That's a huge mouthful of wild and crazy stuff. But what I'm saying, quite frankly, is that the world has become more complex. Okay, now I'm going to ask you, Sue, in the years past, don't people right about this time of year say, oh, I got to do a diet? Okay, yeah. So what's your thought now?
Well, now hopefully it's at least diet and exercise, and maybe we've had an impact. I know my gym is packed right now. And I love to see that, although I have to say in the weight room, I still am one of very few women and girls that spend time in there. Although I have to say all those young dudes no longer ask me if I'm actually using the rack. If I'm standing by it with weights on the bar, it means I'm really using that rack. So
I love that. That's such a great anecdote. I just, you know, are you really using that? No, I'm just standing here moron staring at the wall. What do you think I'm doing? You know, if you were standing here, would you? I wouldn't even ask you. Obviously, you're using the rack.
I know. So, but I mean, I'm always looking at the bright side. And so along with the idea of diet, food restriction, and weight loss, I think that the exercise message is beginning to hit home for more people. And I think that the concept of weight loss is beginning to overlap, at least, with health and fitness and lifespan and health span, meaning that you can enhance the quality of your life over the years that you have by eating well and exercising. However, there is no doubt that when we start out the year, if you pick up a magazine, if you open your laptop, if you look on your phone, if you're scrolling in social media, what you're going to see are as many weight loss plans as there are, I think, stars in the sky. So how do we know, number one, how should we eat to be healthy and promote a lifestyle that we want and support our exercise that we want to do? And the other is this alphabet soup of drugs available to us now to help control how much we eat, not what we eat necessarily, but how much we eat and how hungry we are. And all of this is kind of converging at this time of year to the concept, as you said, of either we think of it as intermittent fasting or time-limited, time-restricted eating. You'll see both terms. You'll see IF and TRE. We just love this alphabet soup, but it's the same thing. Time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting, and it overlaps really with the GLP-1 drugs. And so how do we find our way through the forest?
Oh, I'm going to put something out there for you, Sue. I really want to hear what you have to say about this. Okay. So this is Dr. Peek's take on the whole damn thing. Let's just cut right to quick. Okay. We're not going to sit here and do like, now we're going to talk about 16 hours of fat. No, I'm going to tell you one of the things I found after I met an extraordinary scientist, Dr. Sachin Panda at the Salk Institute, who became a good friend, was the whole issue of honoring the clock. Okay, so I'm all about circadian rhythm. In other words, let's just go back to cavewoman days. And I gotta say, I've always used this analogy, and I just had on the show Dr. Marion Nestle, one of the greatest names in nutrition science. She and I are both Berkeley grads. She's a trip and a half. And of course, she just published her new book, What to Eat Now, which it actually weighs more than I do. I use it as a doorstop. No, it took her 4 years, and she thought it was going to take 6 months to update her original book, What to Eat. And she found out that all the food that she had discussed in the original book doesn't exist anymore. You know, that's how fast everything churns through all these fads and whatever. So here's my take on it. And interestingly, she said the same thing. So I feel somewhat affirmed. Okay, so here it goes. We look at ourselves as cave women. Let's just be a cave woman for a moment. All right. What time did you wake up? When some light hit the cave, and then you heard the Tweety birds, and then you said, man, I'm hungry. And guess what? There was no 7-Eleven. There's no Kroger grocery. Come on now. No refrigerator. Like, girl, your ass is up and moving, because if you don't move and groove, there is no food, right? And so you get up and suddenly you are physically active. No gym needed, man. You got to survive. And so you're up with the Tweety birds. Part of this is survival. You don't want to be in there when bad things want to crawl in there and, you know, have you for lunch. So out you go with your little, you know, tribe or whatever the hell. And, you know, you're foraging and messing around. And, you know, you pick up what you can. Oh, look, there's a raspberry bush. Let's grab some of that stuff instead of saying like, oh, I can't have that. It's got carbs in it. I mean, I just want to laugh my ass off every time I think about how ludicrous it is. It's like, oh my God, it's some carbs. Yeah, it's called living and survival. Now eat the whole bush if you have to. Come on now. And then of course, you know, if you're lucky, you get one main meal. that day. Otherwise, what you have is a bunch of stuff you could just pick and poke and hope that, you know, you can pretty much survive until the next day when hopefully hunting is more productive. And so you're running around physically active just by virtue of survival, and you're eating a little here, eating a little there. With regard to physical activity, you're resting here, you're resting there. So it's this beautiful harmony of a little here or a little there, all interspersed throughout the day. And there are definite times when you have nothing to eat, when you're fasting. I mean, it could be that it's snowing out or, you know, whatever the issue may be. And our bodies were meant to utilize fasting to our metabolic benefit. And we see this in all of the research that's poured out over this whole issue. So I look at the cave woman, you know, kind of ethic, and I say, you know, women say, yeah, but today is 2026. And I'm like, I don't want to break your heart. You know, really, I am the messenger, so don't hurt me here. But to affect enough metabolic change in your genome to thoroughly adapt to the insanity of what we do to our bodies today is impossible, because it takes a long time for the genome to really show, you know, substantial change. The epigenome obviously does, but the genome itself. So for all intent and purposes, I see myself as a cavewoman, damn it. So I'm up with Tweety birds, and I know, there are night owls out there. We'll get to you. By the way, if you are a night owl, you are the one guarding the cave. You are the one to raise your hand saying, oh, I got this, you know, like I'm a night owl. But for the rest of them, you know, the mass majority like to, you know, do the morning thing. And you just follow it like that. And what time do you think they stopped eating? Do you think they stopped eating?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's like they either never had anything to eat in the first place,
right?
In which case, you know, they went directly into some level of a fasting state, or they actually had something to eat, you know, that was fairly substantial. And then, you know, as soon as it became sunset, it's like my ass is out of here, because all kinds of things crawl out of the forest in the dark and they want me for dinner. And so you go back to a safe place. And what do you do there? Well, you like, you know, crank out your iPad and your iPhone and you start doing a little texting. Come on now. No, it was dark in there. And plus, you didn't want to have a whole lot of anything going on because you didn't want to attract any of the bad boys. And so you went to bed at an appropriate time. You went to sleep and up you went with the Tweety birds. Basically, rinse and repeat. Okay? That's the way it was supposed to work. Let's look at it now. Sue, what does it look like today? What's your classic kind of situation today? Flash forward.
Well, the classic situation today is, you know, it's fascinating. When you've been in a field for a long enough time that you see the arc of change and sort of the historical points when things impact our behaviors. So in nutrition, and particularly Marion Nestle, has seen the impact of the food industry on our eating behaviors. So it used to be that we ate 3 squares a day. Let's just say that. And that's been going on a long time, right? We've eaten 3 square meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And sometime during the 1980s that I remember, because I was already a registered dietitian, in the field of sports nutrition, we started to talk about snacking and that athletes needed more fuel and they needed to pre-fuel before exercise. And this was all focused in sports and very active people. Well, the snack food industry, which was taken over by the cigarette industry, who were masters of altering habits and behavior and influenced the way people thought about things, they saw this as an incredible opportunity. Also, as they started to develop all of these ultra-processed food technologies, and it was this opportunity to say, wow, if Americans start snacking, we can feed them and sell them a ton more food. And so all of a sudden, what was to me sports nutrition advice became advice to the average person in concert with, I have to be honest, I'm going to call them out, Gatorade. When I started working in the early 80s and mid 80s with Gatorade, Gatorade was a sports drink. You drank it to fuel your exercise. At a point, late 80s, early 90s, they changed their marketing to what they called a beverage of choice all day long, which is when I stopped working with them, because I didn't understand why kids in school should be drinking Gatorade all day long, why anybody should be drinking Gatorade all day long. And it was all happening at the same time. Everybody needs to eat small, frequent meals all day long. And then it became three big meals with three snacks a day. And we were just buying the heck out of all these products. And there was never any substantiation that that was better for us. At the same time, we were being told that, you know, fats were bad for us because we had the Framingham study that started to tell us there was a problem with fat in our diets and leading to heart disease. And so now we had all these new processed foods that were high in carbs, processed carbs, low in fats. You could eat those all day long. And here we are. We are eating all day long all kinds of things that may or may not give us good nutrition, and certainly way more calories than we need to be eating.
And processing.
And processed, right. And so your story about how people ate at the beginning of human history is certainly relevant, because except for maybe a minor few flips of a genome, we're in the same bodies, right? As you said, we have not changed in the last, 10,000 years.
Sue, I identify as a cave woman.
Yeah. There we go. Right?
I do. I identify as a cave woman.
But you would be a miracle cave woman, right? Because women didn't live much past their childbearing years. And so the new story is, because when you're young, you can do almost anything and survive until you get a cut and there's no penicillin and you die of an infection. But when you age, we also have some other things happening that may not have been happening during 10,000 years ago, but that we are understanding through research does help. And one of those things is not having our digestive systems so full all the time that the rest of the body doesn't get the blood flow it needs to recover on a daily basis.
Nor does it have an opportunity to clean up its mess, which is where fasting comes in.
Yes.
And that fasting piece, you know, people just need to understand what that's all about. And I honestly think the work of both Sachin Panda at the Salk Institute, as well as Dr. Walter Longo at USC's, their large longevity and geriatric institute, has really helped us understand why it is extremely important and beneficial to allow the body time to, as it were, rest and digest, which is what the parasympathetic nervous system does. Rest and digest. Instead, what we do is we eat 24/7. I swear, it's insane. There's no time for the body to clean up the breakdown products of both physical activity as well as, you know, what we eat. And therefore, the non-feeding time, you know, we call it fasting, but the non-feeding time is exquisitely important. There was a fantastic Japanese scientist who won the Nobel Prize in identifying autophagy. And that fancy word basically means, how shall I say this? You're going to love my analogy. So it's like a Dyson goes right through all your cells and sucks up
right.
all of the debris, the dying cells, the pieces of cells right. hanging out, toxins and whatever else. During the phase of autophagy, when you've had at least 6 hours for sure of not eating, and then you enter a stage of autophagy, then it's important to honor that time where your little Dyson's running around cleaning up the mess. And then you have cellular rejuvenation and regrowth, and the cells aren't having to deal with right. all of this extra debris and whatever. That was the magic behind, you know, the whole issue of the fasting or non-feeding hours. Now, the question is, what does that actually look like? You know, if you pull up all kinds of articles about intermittent fasting and whatever, you know, you'll see everything from people who will once a week just drink water for once a week. Other people are like, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll cut my calories like in half every other day, and I'll do that. So I'll kind of, as it were, suffer every other day. And that's alternate day fasting. And then you have all kinds of nuances with regard to how many hours per day you actually fast versus eat. So between you and me, in talking to some of the world's experts who I met at Valter's, you know, big fasting conference a number of years ago, they came in from everywhere, Europe, Australia, UK, all the rest of it. And they all said the same thing. The sweet spot was eating during a window of 10 hours and having 14 hours right. to be able to get that little vacuum going in your body and cleaning things up. That's what that's all about. And it really isn't a vacuum per se. Well, I'm being facetious. Autophagy actually means you are eating yourself, meaning that your cells, the old debris is being cleaned out by systems throughout your body that are refreshing your cells. So I think I'm arguing now for the ability to be able to find a way that everyone out there in the Her Podcast land can individualize and customize and experiment with being a little bit more, how shall we say, cavewomanish, in which case you have to find out based upon your crazy life and all the things that get in the way and back and forth, what works best for you. When I was talking to Dr. Nessel, she said, you know, what everybody says, a way to eat is successful if you can sustain it over time and it has healthful benefits. If you can't check those two boxes, whatever you're doing is crazy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always, you know, speaking as a nutrition coach, if you can't do it, it doesn't matter. I could create the best, healthiest diet in the world. If people don't eat it, it's irrelevant. And so ideally, we can hang our hat on a few data points, but it doesn't mean that if you can't, if this doesn't work for you, then drop the whole thing. So as you said, eating in the morning versus if you set your 10 hours, let's say starting at 6 or 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning, whatever time in the morning, you have something that resembles a breakfast in your mind. Eating earlier and then going into your fasting sort of by 7 or 8 o'clock at night, not eating late at night, rather than saying, I'm going to eat for 10 hours and I'm going to start at noon and I will eat till 10 o'clock at night. Well, the data are showing us that it's actually more healthful. And if you're trying to lose fat, it is slightly better to eat in the morning versus eating late at night. So that's
Well, there's another reason for that. Piling on that, we know that hormones throughout our body have a circadian rhythm. One of them is insulin.
Right.
And so insulin tends to be most efficient in the morning up until about early afternoon-ish. Right. So if you're eating a boatload of food, you know, like say Mount Saint pasta for dinner, then you're flooding your body with a boatload of carbohydrate that your insulin can't manage optimally, and that will be stored as fat guaranteed. So the rule is, if you really want to have some great carbohydrate that usually involves like a starch, then to do it in the morning or at, I love to call the meal that takes place around one-ish, you know, two-ish, the main meal of the day. That's the main meal, because all of your hormonal systems are operating optimally, and you'll be able to metabolize much better than if you were, you know, chowing down at 9 o'clock at night or right. 8 o'clock at night even. So you got to be so careful. That's why I keep saying that clock, circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, we could talk all day long about fancy programs you and I can create, and they can sound real sexy, and we could TikTok them out and whatever. But I don't want, again, I don't want to break anyone's heart out there. Here we go. Okay. You have a prehistoric circadian rhythm built into every cell of your body. Every cell has its own clock. And, you know, you can wish and hope all you want. You could pray over your body. It ain't going to change. You're going to have a circadian rhythm that honors the rotation of the earth, right? Because that's happening on a circadian rhythm. Last time I looked, it was called sunrise and sunset. And you can't mess with that. I know you're trying to mess with that. You go, but I got lights on at nighttime. Yeah, well, thanks for sharing. But, you know, your body is still working on a circadian rhythm, yeah. You know, and you got to stay with it. And that's why I argue against anything strange that really deviates from that too much. You know what I mean? You could still customize.
And that 10-hour window, I like that even better than the 8-hour window and 16-hour fast, is because as women, typically, we can't get in all the nutrition that we really need in a brief period of time. I mean, some people do 4-hour eating windows. It's just not long enough for us to eat well and get in all our nutrition. And so the 8-hour window, 8 to 10 hours, let's say, is much more practical for most of us and allows you to live a social life, allows you to go out to dinner with people. Just say, I need an early bird dinner. But
oh, no, not the blue plate special. Hey, listen, when we come back, Sue, I'm going to be talking more about this whole issue of how do we make this practical, you and I as fellow cave women. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay. Hey, cave woman. So here's the gig. We want to make this work so that women, you just said it, women can see the practicality here and the fact that it will help you. Because when women say, well, I'll go to the gym and I'll just work it all off. Look, don't want to break your heart. That's not the way this goes. The science shows that if you really want to peel off some extra fat, the best way to do it is through nutrition. And then physical activity adds the period at the end of the sentence. So it makes it sustainable. And it maintains that beautiful metabolism. But nutrition is absolutely queen here, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Although if you are focusing only on nutrition for weight loss and restricting your calories, you're also losing more muscle than if you would be working out in the gym. You'll hang on to more muscle while you lose weight because we really don't care what you weigh. I mean, what you weigh only represents the relationship of your body to gravity. What we care about is the proportion of fat to muscle. And so we're always going to lose muscle when we're losing weight. We hope to lose more fat and less muscle when we're gaining weight. We're gaining, hopefully, if we're working out, we're gaining more muscle and less fat. But it's always a ratio. And so in this case, we want to focus on our diet, on our nutrition, on the food that gives us all of the nutrition to build our bodies up so we don't tear them down. The point is, as we live through each day, each week, each month, each year, that we get stronger, that we are more capable, not less. And so that requires really good, solid nutrition. And so over that, let's say 10 hours or 8 hours, you still need all that protein that we've talked about. And it's been talked about multiple times on this podcast. And you don't want to get in, you know, 90 grams of protein in one slug. That's disgusting. It's also not good for your intestines and your digestion.
Your kidneys.
Right. And so when we want to separate. We still want to separate out our food. We still want to fuel our exercise. We don't want to underfuel training. You can underfuel later in the day, but not before your exercise, because then you don't get the biggest bang for your buck when you go in to train. And so making sure you're well-fueled, getting in your protein, getting in all the fiber that we need so that you still have that low inflammatory response in your gut, which transfers out to the whole body, and to get in the bone-building minerals. I mean, I could go on and on. So the story is the same, whether you are on a calorie-restricted diet or a time-restricted eating pattern. You still need the basic foundational nutrition to be super healthy and to train well and to keep your mind clear and do all the things that you want
to do. Well, one of the things that's actually magic about living by your natural circadian rhythm is the fact that effortlessly, you end up eating fewer calories.
Yeah.
Because you have less time to munch out. I mean, if you're eating, well, actually, when Sachin Panda began his scientific work, he went ahead and he just found out what a baseline number of hours of eating of the average American. And he found out that people eat, on average, 15 to 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a second career. Excuse me. Hi, I'm a software engineer and I'm also someone who eats.
Right.
You know, it's like your second career. So, you know, when he saw that, he was like, oh, that's leaving no time for that cellular cleanup, the autophagy. People are eating later. They tend to move it down and they tend to, you know, pack in the largest chunk of calories, usually processed and very heavy stuff by volume in the evening, which is, again, the worst time to do all that. That's like a guaranteed way to be able to pack on pounds.
On your way to marginal diabetes.
I know. It's like pretty nuts. So this is where he just said, okay, let's all calm down here now, you know, all together now. And this is the way it's going to look. What we're going to do is we're going to come up with a reasonable window. Now, by the way, the only reason why he used in his experiments which he did in the beginning with animals. These are rats and mice. And then he eventually went to humans. He used 16-8 because it was the easiest thing. And also, as you know, and I know as researchers, whenever you do research, you want to get your biggest bang for your buck. So you go for a bit of a harder protocol where you know for a natural fact, you're going to get a really cool right. result.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so
kind
I think
stacking the deck. Yeah.
Well, the other reason why you're going to love this, when Sachin told me I fell off my chair, I was laughing so hard. He said, in my original experiments, which were all published in Cell, which is one of the right. top Mag's journals out there for us, his head research guy running, you know, managing the protocol and everything for him, he needed to be home by a certain time. Okay, I'm not kidding. I wish I could make this up.
Right.
No. And he said, you know, I can do the 16-8 thing because it works well with, you know, my household and how everything's work, but I can't do this other, you know, we can't do, you know, 14-10 and whatever. Yeah. He says, I got to get these rats eating over 8 hours and then, you know, we're dead and let's move along. So I laughed, and that's just another perfect example of how crazy science can be when you're executing these experiments. So I personally, ever since I met Sachin, I'm not kidding you, I literally changed on a dime. I went out to the Salk Institute. I was out in the West Coast for other meetings, and I just popped on by to see Sachin, and we spent hours. The science was so compelling that I switched over everything for myself. I have never felt better in my life. So, you know, plenty of wiggle room. Now, here's where it gets cool. Do you think you have to live like this every single friggin' day? Of course not. There's wiggle room. So some days I may do 12-12, which is what a lot of people do. You know, it's 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We're all good, whatever. Okay. Sometimes I'll do 10 and 14. Some days just turn out to be wild and crazy, and I end up with a 16-8 just because life happens that way. Now, he did more experiments, you know, very, very well. And what he did was over the weekend, he decided to just sort of mimic what Americans do, which is let it rip. Okay. So he allowed the mice or rats to eat whatever in the hell they want. Now they were no longer restricted to the 16-8 and whatever. And they ate whatever they wanted. I mean, they had food available 24/7. And sure to form, you know, they definitely took them up on that. But here's what's weird. When they looked at the metabolism, all of the metrics, everything from blood glucose to insulin levels and all the rest of it, when they actually looked at their metrics, the animals who had been Monday through Friday pretty much on the money, right, and then let it rip on the weekends, it didn't even matter with their weight, body composition, or with any of their labs. And he was astounded. Then he began to put two and two together. And here's something that you're going to love. When you do this little honoring the clock thing, what happens is, guess which fat depot is the most sensitive to weight loss? Visceral fat. That's the Mac Daddy. That's the one you need to really control, because when you have too much intra-abdominal fat, too much of it, obviously you have some, that's normal, but too much of it, man, you got diabetes, like you said,
right?
Cardiovascular disease, cancer's up, you know, it's a bad situation. So I love the fact that your body forgives you for your little nuances on the weekend, so long as you're right back at it on Monday. And most people have found, after they've been at this for a while, they tend not to deviate too much anymore. It's sort of, have you noticed that in working with people?
Yeah. Yeah. So this concept of the 80-20 rule has been around forever, right?
Oh, no, not the 80-20 rule. Oh, no.
But that's kind of what you're talking about, that 80% of the time you're on task and 20% you get to, you know, deviate. And so the body likes to, I don't want to say go in a straight line, but it likes to stay within certain parameters. And so you train it. And when you train it, even within whatever intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating, whatever, even calorie restriction, when you set it on a path, it likes to stay on that path, even if you do a little deviation, you drive, you know, off the road. If you completely go in the ditch, you know, all
and we've
off,
been there, trust yeah. me. Yeah,
you go on a bender and it's over. But if you kind of, it's teleological, or we're giving a description to body cells as if they have a brain, which we actually know they kind of do. It's amazing. A whole nother research area. But when we let the body understand what the expectation should be, it stays on track. And so that we can deviate like this, that's why all these different patterns, 2 days of fasting, 5 days of eating, or 3 days of alternate sort of kind of sort of fasting and 4 days of eating more on time restriction, or whatever you do, those things, the body will adapt. I think in my experience of working with many, many, many people, the sort of regularity of every day works best. And the 2 and 5, often, you know, people start out that way and they fall off the wagon. It becomes difficult, first of all, to truly fast all day and still be functional. I mean, unless you're someone who has no other responsibilities to show up for anything, fasting all day is uncomfortable and you don't perform at your best. And so that's why this time-restricted eating is so beneficial. It puts us in the sweet spot during the hours that we need to be sharp and alert and we can feel well-fueled to go to exercise. And then it lets us, you know, rest our body and recover in the alternate hours. And that's why I like that pattern, but as you're saying, everyone should find what works for them and know that this is not mandatory. You can also, if just eating less without time restriction works well for you, then do that.
But I mean, you know, it you have to experiment.
Right.
And also, you know, let's talk about women. You know, women's needs, their nutritional needs, they'll change over time. So I've got to tell you the little anecdote with Dr. Nessel. It was a really great interview because she's always been one of my kind of icons in nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
And she turned out to be a riot. She's 89 years old.
I know, and she's still...
She's 89, know, and she's still...
Writing books in emeritus faculty.
Yeah, and she's got her faculty office, and you know, and you're like, I want to be like her. Toward the end of the interview, we were just hanging out, and I said, so, like, how do you eat during the day? Like, you know, you're one of the queens of nutrition. People buy all your books, and you know, we hail you as the one. She goes, oh, okay, well, let's see now. Yeah, I wake up in the morning and I don't like breakfast. So I'm like, okay, all right, you don't like breakfast. She goes, yeah, I don't really start feeling like I want to have anything until about 11. And I'm thinking about all the RDs out there falling off their chairs going, what? But hey, I don't want to, you know, again, break your heart in 5,000 pieces, but she's 89 and you're not. And that means that she knows something that you don't know. And she's awfully healthy right now. And so why don't you listen on up? So what's the lesson here in her telling me that? Well, you know, let me finish the rest of the day. So I said, oh, so what do you have? She goes, yeah, probably some cereal. I said, really? What kind? And she goes, oh, multigrain. I like that. And might do some multigrain stuff and everyone's falling off their chairs. Gluten and all those horrible things that are ripping your microbiome into shreds. And meanwhile, she's like, maybe it's worked for years, you know. And then I said, well, what do you have the rest of the day? I don't know. You know, it's like whatever's around. And, you know, I just sort of put it together. And then I said, well, when do you finish eating? And she says, you know, I eat early. Notice I said that. And I eat early, you know, like I'm finished up by no later than, you know, 6:30 and I'm good to go. Right. So what did we learn from all of this? We learned that there's a lot more wiggle room than you think. Number one. Number two, being super rigid and strict and, you know, having to grind your teeth through it is not helping you. Last time I looked, I don't know, food's supposed to be delicious and nourishing and nutritious and enjoyable, you know, all those neat things. So what happened to that? And I think that also what's all over TikTok and, you know, Instagram and God knows what else, YouTube, are a bunch of young men, especially, who are on very rigid kind of stuff that, you know, they give it all kinds of names and whatever. And then they've got, you know, kind of tech bro bodies. They're lifting weights, doing their thing.
What they're shooting into themselves just by the way.
Not going to even go there. and so I think it really influences a lot of people. Now, let's quickly pivot to something that you and I were talking about before the show. What is going on with women? Now, we're talking about health, and we know that if you live a little bit more like a cave woman, you know, with nuances around that, your numbers, your lab numbers improve beautifully. Your visceral fat and your belly fat improves tremendously. We have tons of evidence that shows that your waist circumference decreases. And of course, if you're having enough protein and lifting weights, your muscle mass will be optimized as well. But, oh my God. So you flip through the pages of Vogue magazine and we're back to the skinny women again. You know, I saw one the other day that had about 14 feet between her thighs. She was like, what? Where did you come from, Stickland? Yet for a while there, things had changed. What happened there, Sue?
I think it's the fashion industry, honestly.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
They need us to buy new stuff year in and year out. And if they change the body type, then the fashion itself changes. And so between Hollywood and the fashion industry, and of course, social media, we are seeing a return to the bad old days of the 1980s. Before that, I remember Twiggy, which was the same kind of image, but we didn't quite understand, I think, what we were looking at that time. That was the 1960s. And so by the 1980s, sort of the anorexic body type became very popular. And the whole concept of a muscular woman or a well-defined body for a woman just was not in vogue. It was neither in vogue nor was it in vogue. And so we went through such hard work to change that image, to educate a whole new generation of women to be comfortable in their skin, that who you are is not defined by the way your body looks, that health is what matters, taking care of your nutrition, your mental health, your physical well-being, all of these things are good for, as we talked about, health span, longevity, and to be strong contributors to the world around us. And now it is going back. We are seeing skyrocketing levels of cigarette smoking in the younger generation, both.
And for a long time, they had given that up too. Well, there's another layer to all this. And the other layer, it's very interesting. Once these weight loss drugs popped up, now all of a sudden, there was the most fascinating op-ed in the Wall Street Journal written by a psychiatrist whose name is Alfred. He might be a psychiatrist. I think he's a psychiatrist. What he basically said was patients were coming in saying that they had bought into the body positivity thing. When they say they bought into it, they did that publicly, but secretly to themselves, they never bought it. They were never happy with their bodies. And now that they're on GLPs and their bodies are changing in a way that is more beneficial in terms of their health and well-being, their numbers, the labs, and the rest of it, they're almost afraid to say anything because there's been this kind of an ethos out there of it's okay if you're substantially obese. And when, according to Dr. Alfred, he said that, no, that's not true. That's not really true at all. That most people really wanted to change for the better. They just had no tools to do it. And now you have these meds, and suddenly the body positivity movement per se has morphed. Now, I'm going to make very clear to everyone what I mean by this. Every woman comes in a magnificently awesome shape and size. You need to love yourself. You need to be able to be proud of who you are, mentally, physically, spiritually. You need that. That is absolutely foundational. But you also have to pay attention to your health. And so health is exquisitely foundational. You believe whatever you want, but if you have no health, then you got a problem. And now, you know, if you look at all the new national global trends, the global trends are health, wellness, and longevity. So if you're doing everything you can to be as healthy as you can, how about that meditation? How about taking, you know, those walks? How about connecting with other people? How about eating nutritious whole foods and doing something radical called cooking? How about addressing your sleep and your stress? All those things. That's what I'm talking about. And then your body will follow. Don't start with the body. The body is going to follow when the process of how you live changes for the better. And all along, you still love yourself. You're proud of yourself. It's just that you've got to remember to weave in health and wellness throughout.
Oh, absolutely. So the GLP-1 drugs are an amazing advancement. Undeniably, people struggling to find health who couldn't do it on their own, just eat less and exercise more, right? Just like we say, just say no to drugs. Those things, platitudes, are not helpful. And so the GLP-1 drugs, I think, are in an early phase, but they are helpful for the proper individuals. But even within that, as you're saying, even when you have the medical support or the pharmaceutical support, you still need to understand how to adjust your lifestyle so that whether or not you stay on those drugs forever, you are supporting health. And so I talk about weight loss is not a goal. Weight loss is an outcome of changing all the things that you have talked about and giving yourself a pat on the back each day for going out for a walk. That's your goal. Being a little more physically active, getting up off the couch, doing something and planning and carrying that through on a daily basis, setting up a time when you have a creative expression during your day, having your spiritual opportunities, making sure that you have strong relationships in your life, doing, you know, making the world a better place through volunteer work or whatever that may be, and eating well and hydrating well. Each one of those on a daily basis or a weekly basis, those are goals that you
and that's exactly off. How we're going to end this fantastic episode with you. What a beautiful way to be able to summarize all that. and remembering that both of us said the same thing, and you said it so gloriously, and that is any level of excess fat in your body that is reduced was never the goal. It's an outcome, because the real goal was to clean up all of those other elements to start with. And so I think that that is a powerful message coming from Dr. Susan Kleiner. Learn more about her incredible work at her website, Dr. Kleiner, and that is drskleiner.com, because she's so damn smart. And this is why, you know, we keep grabbing you again and again to help elucidate some of these crazy controversies and issues that women really want to get to the bottom of. And we did that today with our little cave woman episode here. So again, thank you, Sue, for being on the Her podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Pam.
And I want to thank my sponsors, Solaray, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages products that help a woman. Oh, they've got her back from menstruation all the way through postmenopause. Scope it all out at Solaray, SolaRay.com. And now take a moment to leave us a review, because we just sit around waiting to hear from you. This has been a production of Podcast Health. And you know, your time is limited in this world, but the things you can do with that time are certainly not. So you choose to get up off your feminine behind and get out there and seize the day. Carpe diem, girlfriends. Thanks for listening.